best you got of me. If you like the podcast, remember to check us out on YouTube, where you get to see comedy commentary and a whole lot more. That's the YouTube channel, Balderdash Academy. Happy December! Welcome to the weirdest comedy game show online, Balderdash Academy. Tonight, we have visiting professor, actor, improviser Ben Remeka, and a special game from our past. But first...
Balderdash Academy, competitive comedy. Good for your health like a yearly colonoscopy. Bring a flask, don't forget your hall pass. If you need a laugh, let me introduce the school staff. Marie Stewart Harmon teaches home economics. See her after class for some home brewed tonics. Sex with me is like Nate Green, cause finishing on top is his normal routine. Coach Steve brings the show sports knowledge, but he's bad at portmanteaus cause he didn't go to college. Paulie McGill spits words like an Uzi. She wins every game but can't name a single movie. They call him Brady Hunt, the theater guru. He'll always almost win like deja voodoo. Carla Rose Dubois, you better watch your back. She's notoriously known for teaching music facts. And Bob LeBlanc gets no disrespect. Don't talk back, cause he's technically correct. Yes, let's go. Balderdash Academy, baby. Alright, sit down. Class is starting.
You just barely managed to eke out a win over Steve last month. You won by a single point. So what are your tactics to hold on to that victory tonight?
I'm just shooting for the moon and I'm going to try to go for 2 points this time. Over.
Oh,
fighting words. It's attainable goals. Okay.
That's a sound strategy. Yeah. So our visiting professor today is Ben Remeka. You've seen him on Wolf of Wall Street, Amazon Prime's Alpha House, the Eliza Schlesinger sketch show on Netflix, final season of Broad City. You've heard him on your TV, on streaming services. Ben, welcome to Balderdash Academy.
Yay. What a real pleasure. To be here in December. You know, winter in New England is definitely my favorite season.
Which, you grew up in New England. You're a New Englander.
Yeah, I'm kind of a bit of like a New England state mutt. I was born in Rhode Island, but raised in Vermont. So I like beef jerky and Ben and Jerry's, but I'm also insanely corrupt. So.
Which is good. Yeah. I mean, it's good to have that spread on the New England feel, you know? Yeah.
Which is why you're now in New York, right?
They made me leave. They said, you can't be here anymore. We don't need another Buddy Cianci, if you know that topical reference. I don't
Now, for those new to our show, Ben has agreed to be the scorekeeper tonight while our faculty competes for the coveted reigning champion banner. Now, our faculty will divvy out their expertise, and at the end of which, Ben will award points to the competitor he feels is most worthy. He is not looking for the correct answer. I mean, he's probably not going to find the correct answer. But he's looking for the best answer, the answer that should be correct, but isn't. The points are arbitrary and can be given to anyone at any time for any reason. At the end of the show, the faculty member with the highest point total will be named the reigning champion, because that's how math works. So our first game today is a blast from the past. It is a fan favorite, and this is the first time we're doing it this way. We're about to play Lie, Lie Again. Now, I will present a weird or unusual fact about a select member of the faculty. The statement can be the truth or it can be a lie. Faculty members may question the subject to better understand whether or not the statement is the truth or a lie. And either way, the subject must convince everyone that the unusual fact is true, no matter how absurd it sounds. At the end, Ben will award points as he see fits. So tonight's truth is about our visiting professor.
Ooh.
Ben once voiced an animated three-legged dog in College Humor's WTF 101.
Holy cow.
So there we go. That is the statement. I'm sorry. I mean, I knew it was a secret, but I had to just drop that, Ben. Ben will defend why this is true, and it is up to our faculty to figure out whether or not this is a truth or a lie. Let's start with the first line of questioning. Molly.
What was said three-letter dog character's name?
The dog character's name was Mona.
Mona.
Whoa.
Short for Desdemona. Ooh. Which means in Greek, ill-fated.
Ooh.
Three legs, ill-fated.
Three legs.
Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Nate, what do you got?
What did Mona do to her fourth leg? Like, where is it?
Yeah, where'd that fourth leg
where
go?
Where is that fourth? It's probably decomposing in a landfill right now.
Oh, God.
Not I mean, helpful I would to assume, Mona.
That's fair. That sounds true. Okay, I'm convinced so far.
Yeah. All right.
Go ahead, Molly.
Could you give us a taste of Mona's voice there? Can you pull that from the archives?
Sure, yeah. It was something like this. A bit of an older British lady. Mona.
Okay, so I'm feeling that's maybe a Yorkie. What kind of dog was this three-legged Mona?
So she was a shepherd mix, but on the smaller side. So not quite super Yorkie. Think more, another topical reference, a play from the early 1900s, Silver Foxes. Think Silver Foxes.
Yeah, something quite familiar.
How about if Golden Girls was made in the 30s?
Okay. Mm.
That's a good premise. I like that. What kind of misadventures did Mona get into in this episode?
They're very simple and down to earth. The difficulties of wiping your mouth. I should say that the leg was missing in the front.
Okay. Yes. That would make mouth wiping difficult.
Yes. Yeah. The difficulties of digging into, say, a rawhide or a Nyla bone because there's not another, there's not something to press against. It has to be finessed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's mostly eating, chewing mishaps. How embarrassing it is to go out when you're a dog and be asked to either shake or high five.
Poor Mona.
Yeah, that's tough, right?
So, Mona, you described her as an older dog. What was her early life like?
Fairly pastoral.
Backstory.
Sure. Nate, I thank you so much for asking that. But much like your last name, it was pastoral and verdant. She grew up in Pennsylvania on the western side. But don't think that she was conservative politically. I know that western Pennsylvania can get a little Ohio-ish. Nothing against Ohio. I'm not going to go through that again. But yeah, she grew up in a very green, pastoral, rolling hills, Anne of Green Gables type, which you know, right? Because you're Gable.
Ben, how did you fall into this amazing role of a lifetime?
Believe it or not, it turns out that I knew the person who was the producer, and they thought that to themselves, we need someone who is not only mentally damaged, but has experienced emotional difficulties in their life, but also is physically incapable. And I'm a terrible, terrible athlete. And everyone else before me, I think there were 11 people, said no. So maybe the last part. Now that I think about it, the last part might be the primary reason, but I choose to believe.
Go ahead, Steve.
Ben, what kind of prep did you do to get into this role? I'm kind of curious about that.
Yeah, a lot of jumping on one leg. Mm-hmm. A lot of laying down. I still have a couple lawsuits pending because I sniffed a lot of butts, Steve, which I thought would get me into the role. But it turns out that, this is a long time ago, as Bob said, and things have changed. And well, they should. Yeah. Well, they should. But consent is a big part of how we should operate on a daily basis. And I made some mistakes.
Oh. They were human butts.
Oh, was I not clear about that?
No. Important details. Important details.
Yeah, weirdly, the dog butts, they were like, people were like that.
If Mona were a golden girl, which one would she be?
Ooh, good one.
Great question. Bob, when can I can give points at any point? Are we giving points now?
You want to give a point? Give a point, yeah.
Oh, man. I love to give everybody a baseline of 20 points.
Ooh, baseline 20. Woo!
And I'm going to bump Marie up a quick 10 right there for that Woo-hoo! Golden Girl question.
That's 10 great. Points. Marie.
Thank you.
Marie, you might have to help me out. Estelle Getty's character was
Sophia?
Named... Sophia.
Oh, yeah.
Throw a 5 to Molly for those Sophia.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, sagacious, wise, but also like a little bit cranky.
Yeah.
You know, Sophia was definitely like the old man in the Muppets, right? She was up above it all and always had a wise crack. I feel like Mona's character in this was much akin to that.
I dig that.
I have my last question for you, Ben.
All right.
Okay.
Was this role before or after 3D Burrito, the short film that you were in?
3D Burrito. It was shortly before. So strangely enough, on the shoot with Mona, or the VO with Mona, rather, which is a shoot, of course, there was a couple, the DP was doing his own thing that he brought me into. He said, I had this great idea. I gave him my information. I was like, of 3D Burrito, get the hell out of here. Like, you know who I am? No way, man. No way.
I'm Mona.
That's right, I'm Mona. And I was also just, because it was a white dude, and I was like, Burrito, let's just be careful with the subject. It turned out it was handled really, really well. And that the burrito was, in fact, three-dimensional visually, but also emotionally, culturally.
Love that.
All right. Any other questions before we get our conclusions?
Nope.
Mm-mm. All right. So you've heard what Ben said. You've heard him defend his position. Molly, is it the truth or a lie?
As much as I wish this was the truth, and I do see this in the future coming out, I'm sure somebody listening right now is writing the screenplay, and you might even star in person in it. But I do believe right now it is only aspirational, and it is in fact a lie.
All right, Steve, what's your call?
Oh, man. Yeah, again, you want it to be true, right? A three-legged dog named Mona. But I think what happened was Ben saw my cat in the background here, also named Mona.
Ooh.
And somehow, some the universe connected to his brain.
Convergence.
And, yeah,
it's convergence,
little,
man.
Yep. So just based on that and the 3D burrito thing, it seemed like he was maybe kind of busy at the time doing voiceovers for
burrito
food.
Business.
I'm going to say it's a lie.
All right. So Marie, Steve dropped a lie with a question mark. What do you got?
I also really, really want this to be true because I would watch this. I'm going to go with it's the truth. I think that Ben very well could have played a three-legged, sweet little old lady shepherd rescue dog.
All right, Nate.
I honestly, look at that face. How can it be anything but the truth? And I do mean but because he went around sniffing butts. In fact, not only do I believe it to be true, but I sincerely hope that Disney makes a live action adaptation out of it.
Live
that would be. I don't care if it's Disney Plus or.
Yeah,
like it'll a Shaggy Dog scenario.
Breathe deeply, the Mona story.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. So Ben, you've heard their conclusions. We have Molly with a lie, Steve with a lie, Nate with the truth, Marie with the truth. Are there any additional points you'd like to give?
Yeah, I want to do 7 across the board. And Steve, you have a cat named Mona?
Yep, there she is, right there.
Oh my gosh! Can we give 12 points to Mona?
Yeah,
that's fair.
You look at it. 12 so to Mona.
Seems fair.
Oh, I love that.
All right, 12 points for Mona. So, what do you think the answer is? I'm not going to tell you right now. Neither's Ben. Oh. Let us know and check back after 4 questions to find out. because that's how clickbait works. Our visiting professor tonight is Ben Remeka. Ben is a New England-raised graduate of the University of Vermont. He moved to New York City to attend the Actors Studio MFA program. He was a longtime improviser and teacher at UCB in New York City. He can be seen and heard on your TV, streaming services, in commercials, voiceovers. He currently calls Brooklyn his home, so you have all you need to do to stalk. Ben, thanks for coming on the show.
Yay.
You know, we love doing our research for this and watching everything research that you're in. I'd watched Alpha House when it first came out. Your character killed me the first time around.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
That, like, Broken Innocence is perfect. There's a particular scene in that if you haven't seen Alpha House, you have to go watch a series. It's currently on, I believe it's available on Prime.
Yeah.
You got to go check it out. It's killer. It's
funny.
You might have missed it. It's good. So you've done movies, TV shows, you've done audio projects, you've done long form improv. Yeah. I mean, you have a diverse career. What's your favorite? Where does your passion lie? If you could do anything you want to do tomorrow artistically, what would it be?
Balderdash Academy.
Voiceover of Mona.
Again.
That's really, really tough. If I could do anything, there's a couple projects I've worked on that were like for film or TV that I felt were really creatively fulfilling, and you were allowed to play a lot on set. Yeah. In case you don't know what that means, it means like, you know, when you shoot certain things, you have to stick to the lines. The director wants it a certain way. Egos are big. There's been a couple projects down the way in the past where I was able to, you know, you just kind of want one take for you. Like, even if it doesn't get used, if someone can be like, why don't you play? You're like, oh yes, let me play a little bit. So there's been a few of those that I really wish had gone to series, for instance, or been picked up by Comedy Central. that didn't. That'd be nice. But you know what? I would be perfectly content making money, doing commercial work, and being able to improvise, you know, every once in a while. Like I feel like, I remember when I got to graduate school and I was doing like these plays in like tiny little black box theaters in New York City that no one would come to, real weird. And I pivoted towards doing long form improv at UCB, and a friend that was in the play said, you know, why did you make the move towards comedy? And I said, well, I realized that I didn't want to make people cry. I wanted to make them laugh. And you can do both. And you can do both, certainly, in different mediums. But, you know, I think that there's a different response you can elicit in those different areas. And, you know, to get the response from improvising, as all I'm sure all of you guys have heard about as professors, are well studied. There's nothing quite like it, you know. So, yeah, I would say first, a great TV show, a great comedic TV show, you know, something that really resonates with people. Mm-hmm. And then if that couldn't happen, you know, keep on making money, but still be able to improvise in a live setting doing comedy. So,
I mean, there's nothing better than that instant connection.
Nothing. Mm-hmm. Really, really. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And improv, if I may go on a little bit longer, improv, I think is special because it is communal and it is an in joke and it's gone after that. It's gone. You know, you have this shared moment, it's ephemeral, and then it disappears. There's something sweet about that, I think.
Yeah, and you were in Vermont last weekend doing just that.
I was in Vermont in October, I think you mean.
Oh, yes, in October.
So close, Molly.
It felt like yesterday.
It felt like this past weekend to me. I was
November
there.
Just flew by.
It flew by. I'm still working off the pounds, but it did fly by. I did some shows in Vermont, which was wonderful, especially as I know you guys have heard about since you study local improv scenes. After the pandemic and not being able to perform for a long time, you know, you want. Yeah, you got that back. Really not. I did like a quick earnest speech in the second half, and I got a little bit more choked up than I thought I would be.
What kept you sane during the downtime from the pandemic?
Wine. Wine, like answer. Fast forward juice. I call it fast forward juice.
Wow. And, I might steal that. That's really good.
And I perfected like my lasagna, my beef bourguignon, my jambalaya. Mm. I refused to do the sourdough bread starter. I didn't do that. No, if you did, no shame. I like focused sort of on cooking a lot. Nice.
I tried the sour lasagna starter. It was not a success.
That's when you use sour cream instead of like mozzarella.
When you do too much forget juice and you wake up 2 weeks later and you're like, what the hell is this on the stove?
But you eat it anyways.
That's why they make an oven. All right, join us when we return for four questions and the answer to Lie, Lie Again here on Balderdash Academy. Go Dashers! Woo! Welcome back to Balderdash Academy. We have visiting Professor Ben Remeka. And remember, after four questions, we find out whether or not Ben voiced an animated dog. So stick around, right? Now, before we go, our points are... Right now, in last place, we have Mona the Cat.
Yeah!
12 points.
Good job, baby.
Yes. Next, we have a three-way tie between Nate, Steve, and myself, a 27. Molly with 32. And in the lead, we have Marie with 37 points. Well,
I'm almost that old.
All right.
Now you're making me feel like Sophia.
Joining us today is our visiting professor, Ben Remeka. You can see and hear him on your TV streaming services, in commercials, in voiceovers. Now, before we move on to our next game, I will spin the Balderdash Randomizer. The Balderdash Randomizer will pull an opening icebreaker question from a series of questions written by our intern, Alan. So the randomizer will generate the question, and Ben will need to answer in 30 seconds or less. Oh, our first question. Question number three.
Yes.
What book would you always recommend?
Oh, geez. 30 seconds?
What's at stake if it takes more than 30 seconds? Is like the floor fall out or something?
I don't know. Yeah. Is there a trap door? Okay, this is going to be a big Homer response. Okay. But I would recommend The Stand by Stephen King.
Ooh. Ooh.
Nice.
Fantastic.
I'm already regretting it. Gabriel Garcia Marquez, I'm by my bookshelf and they're shaming me right now.
They're all judging you.
I swear you were going to say The Odyssey after you said it was a Homer response.
I thought you
response.
Were too.
Yeah. Oh. Nice. Yeah.
It was just like a living history of The Simpsons. Here's a Homer response.
I was certain The Odyssey was coming too.
Now, Ben can be seen in a number of places on film, TV, online, and audio projects. One of his more higher profile projects is in Martin Scorsese's The Wolf of Wall Street. And so, in honor of our visiting professor, tonight's four questions will be about The Wolf of Wall Street.
Oh, my God.
Whichever one of our faculty members gives the best, not the correct, but the best answer, Ben will award points. Our first question. The film is based on the book of the same name by Jordan Belfort. What unlikely event inspired Belfort to write the book? Steve, what made him write the book?
I think it was just long extended times with nothing to do in prison.
Boredom. So the same reason why we started the show.
Exactly, Bob. We were in prison, but basically.
he was taking a cab while watching a movie on his iPhone, and the movie was White Fang. And he's like, oh, this is interesting. And then he realized he was on Wall Street. And he's like, I got nothing else to do. So he put together a book, and I just realized I stole half of Steve's answer.
Yeah. Well, the nice thing is with the amount of drugs he did in real life, he likely saw White Fang on Wall Street. Molly, what do you got?
A lot of people don't know that, but he's actually a cryptologist. And so he's really into urban legends. And if you're a Manhattanite, you know that there is the Wolf of Wall Street legend that comes out every blue moon. And so he really embraced this one night on a bender and decided to go full bore, write a screenplay.
Well, Wolf of Wall Street, of course, about the broker who sees the full moon and turns into a wheeling and dealing werewolf. Marie, what
That's
do you got?
Well, as a youngster, he had the privilege of getting some penny stocks and was like, huh, this is interesting. And the money that he made from these penny stocks, he bought his very first journal with. And this journal was the inspiration and all of the beginning thoughts of The Wolf of Wall Street.
Wow. All right, so almost what the plot of the movie is, in a way. Yeah. We have Steve with boredom, Nate with taking a cab while watching White Fang of Wall Street, Molly with cryptologist urban legends Wolf of Wall Street. He started writing the screenplay. Marie, he got the privilege of getting penny stocks and made enough money to buy a first journal. Ben, how would you like to score?
I'm going to go 7 to Steve. For the most negligible amount of effort.
but the quickest.
That is true. That is true. But if we were rewarding speed, then I wouldn't be single.
That's also his fiance's biggest complaint about Steve. So we get it. Right?
Oh, no. I realized she was emailing you guys about that.
Well, we got pics and everything, man.
A lot, poor Steve. We'll give 10 to Nate. Molly will give 12. Marie, we're gonna give you 3. A monster like Jordan probably never journaled in his life, but he should have.
He should. Yeah. He could have got his feelings out.
Profit from penny stocks. Like that's pretty crazy to imagine. Well,
a journal was just a blank for rolling papers.
Bob, I am convinced. Give Marie 8 more, baby.
8 more. There we go. Now, all right. Nate, go on.
Sorry, I just wanted to mention that Marie actually, if I had to vote, she would win it because since he is a monster and he was doing penny stocks, he probably got the idea from Pennywise.
Oh! Nate with the butt kissing because I said Steve at
King.
I love him. Let's give him 11 points.
What?
11 wow. extra. Oh, butt kissing right. is in. Okay, here
All
we
right.
go.
Brown nose to win. So...
just like that dog.
Why did Jordan Belfort write the book? Well, there's a whole lot of oh yeah in this answer when you find out that his cellmate was Tommy Chong.
Oh yeah,
what?
Who was in jail for having drug paraphernalia, and Tommy Chong of Cheech and Chong fame convinced him to write a memoir.
Tommy Chong did drugs.
Nate, I sent you a memo.
Just the one. So,
speaking of drugs were essentially a supporting character in the film, but they couldn't have the actors do real drugs for plausible deniability reasons. So in the film, what did they do instead, Nate?
They used ground up bees. And they called it vitamin B, and they would actually like snort that. What they didn't realize is that some of the actors really had bee allergies, and they thought it was real vitamin D. B, excuse me, I didn't want to mess that up. So there was a little allergic reaction, but nothing, thankfully, too bad.
Yeah, that explains Jonah Hill's teeth in the movie. Marie, what do you have?
Sugar cubes, straight up just sugar. They wanted to make sure that everybody was still getting that high, but safely as possible. And naturally, there's a bug in here. And they were just getting that sugar, that nose candy right up there. Sugar right to the brain.
Diabetes over addiction. Molly, what do you have?
There happened to be a lot of chafing on the set. There's a lot of like tight suits and moving. So what they had an abundance of was talcum powder. And when the scene came up to do the drug scene, they realized, oh crap, what are we don't have anything. We can't use drugs. And so prop manager saves the day as always, coming in with the talcum powder. Now, they all have mesothelioma, but, you know, that's beside the point.
Obviously inspired by Ben's method in the three-legged dog research. Steve, what do you got?
I think, if I remember right, it was crushed up Pepto-Bismol tablets, which, you know, sounds good on paper, but the problem was they all kind of, the actors taking the drugs, it ended up sinking their BMs, which caused a lot of problems on the plumbing.
Sinking? No, that makes sense. Sinking, yeah. Yeah, eventually there's a cycle and they merge.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It happens. Yeah,
it's the ultimate bonding. All right.
Oh, so Lord.
We have, what did they use instead of real drugs? We have Nate with ground up bees. Pete is going to be on her ass for that answer, Nate. Marie with sugar cubes, Molly with talcum powder, and Steve with Pepto-Bismol. Ben, how would you like to score?
I appreciate Nate being first out of the gate. It's always the most difficult job in this game, I think. And since you said crushed up bees, I'll give you the queen's number, which is a number 12.
Woo! Right? 12.
10, Jack Queen.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah.
Molly throwing some props to the crew. When, if you recall, just a couple months ago, in the middle of October, there was a huge fight going on in the union for people behind the scenes, and we should give them props. So we'll give Molly a 10-pointer on that.
Yes.
You know, this was not Marie's intention, but she did say sugar cubes, which is, of course, a horse's greatest treat. And everyone knows that the drug that's most popular right now in December is a horse tranquilizer Special K, which I'm sure that Jordan used at some point.
It was a dewormer.
I would talk to your guy, Bob. I talked to you.
You know, it's a COVID thing. All right.
Oh, yeah. You're like, what do you got, baby? I'll take whatever you got. So we'll give Marie a healthy 13.
Thank you.
Who's left?
Steve.
And we got Steve, say?
Synced up Bell.
Steve had Pepto-Bismol.
And the sinking of the BMs.
Oh, yes, the BMs. That's what it was. So since you mentioned poop, I'll give you a number 2.
Sinking of the BMs means that now all bowel movements need to be known as Bismarcks. So the I thought it was funny. So the drugs essentially were crushed vitamin B. The cast snorted so much of it during production that Jonah Hill developed bronchitis and had to be hospitalized.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh.
So, Bond girl Joanna Lumley from Ab Fab fame plays the relative of Margot Robbie's character. However, Lumley's role almost went to another actress. Who did it almost go to, and why was she not in the movie? Marie, who did it go to, and why was she not in the film?
Carrie Fisher. well, she wasn't in the film. R.I.P. But Carrie Fisher would have been incredible.
All right, Molly, what do you have?
It's of course Cher.
Oh, that's Cher.
But they didn't cast her because the nose would have taken too much of the talcum powder. So they realized that it would have been an expense. So
all right, makes sense. Steve, what do you have?
Dame Judi Dench, obviously. the producer had a lisp and he had trouble saying her names quickly. So that's why she had to be cut from the film.
All right. And Nate, what do you have?
I have Leah Thompson. Period.
From like
Leah Thompson.
Period.
No reason. She's not in it for no reason. She just period.
I don't know her. I don't know.
He's just stating a fact. Yeah. Like, come on.
Okay. All right. So who wasn't in the movie and why? Marie, Carrie Fisher.
Yeah.
Because she was dead, is what you're getting at for the 2014. She was planning on dying in 2014. I guess we're talking about. Cher, because they were afraid of their vitamin B stock. Dame Judi Dench, because the producer had a lisp. And Leah Thompson, for her own reasons, and really, we should respect her privacy.
Yes.
Thank you. All
right. Yes. Ben, how would you like to score?
You know, I really love the anachronism of Carrie Fisher's death being mixed in while there is also a player who was most prominently featured in Back to the Future, right? So we have like a little bit of a time crunch there. So I'm going to give Nate and Marie both 11.
Thank All you. Right.
Yeah. Like I got to take away points from Molly.
All right.
Never denigrate Cher.
Whoa.
It wasn't denigration. It was uplifting.
Was
I was supporting. Oh my gosh. And did you not?
Clean for years.
You cannot. Have you seen that woman?
Moonstruck. Go right now. Watch Moonstruck. Oh my gosh.
Trust me. Have you seen that woman at 73? She looks like she's 24.
I love it. Yeah, I love it.
I love her.
All right. Would you like to remove points? You can. Negative scores are a thing.
I'll take away 3 points for each time that Cher was robbed of an Oscar. I don't know if that's
so
accurate.
That would be all of the Oscars except for the one.
And those were Molly's fault, weirdly enough.
I mean, what would they be? Moonstruck, she won it for. Mermaid, yep. Mask, that's a read.
I'm so pumped to know all the Oscars she won.
She was in so she only won one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, let's move on from this.
Do you believe in love?
All right.
Wait, so, Steve left, right? What was Steve's name?
That's all right. Steve said Dame Judi Dench because the producer had a lisp and couldn't pronounce it.
Dame Judi, baby.
Pronounce it.
Mm. I love Dame Judi. 30 points.
Who doesn't?
30 points.
30 points.
Wow.
Yeah. You should try saying Dame off the Judi bench, Dench baby. With a lisp.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's Dame hard. I just thought Judi of it Dench. In the moment.
Give it a try, Steve. Come on.
Yeah, let's see it, Steve.
Lisp Dame Judi Dench. Oh, it's fine.
Oh, yeah.
It's fine. Never mind. I was wrong. But I'll take that 30.
The exact same way you said it before. You just read
Dame.
Normally.
There's not many S's, so it's not that hard to do.
Not any S's.
Dame Judi Dench.
There's none. Steve, were you
still missing phoneme?
Yeah. You thought you had a silent lisp when you were a child?
You're like, I have a little trauma from that, yeah.
So Joanna Lumley plays the relative of Margot Robbie. The role originally was going to go to Mary Poppins herself, Julie Andrews, who had to back out of the film due to an ankle injury.
Wow.
That would have been incredible.
Yeah, the hills could have been alive with the sound of Quaaludes.
So, wow. Talk about building your portfolio.
I want to see this version of the film.
Now, according to Empire Online, before Martin Scorsese became interested in the project, who was lobbying to direct the film? Who was interested in directing? It went to Martin Scorsese. Somebody else was definitely interested. Molly, who was interested in directing the show?
Nicolas Cage. He wanted to try his hand at something new. He had the fame of The Rock. And knew that he could probably do it.
That's fine. The Rock, to me, is an unofficial sequel to James Bond. It makes perfect sense. You know, you got Connery in there. His original Bond disappeared since the 60s.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So, Steve, who was tapped to direct?
Originally, it was supposed to be Peter Jackson, but he insisted that it be shot in the mountains of New Zealand, and they felt that wouldn't really fit the vibe of Hollywood.
Yeah, and he stretched out the small story into 4 separate films, each with massive special effects budgets. That makes perfect sense. Nate, what do you got?
It was going to be Edgar Wright with Simon Pegg and Nick Frost starring in the lead roles.
Oh, my God.
And they actually, even though they didn't officially make it, they did make it over the pandemic. They just forgot to film it.
That makes sense. My favorite part of Wolf of Wall Street was right in the beginning of the film when they told you the entire plot of the movie, start to finish. It's only Edgar Wright can. Marie, what do you have?
James Cameron, but it was too recent that he'd made his most recent movie before The Wolf of Wall Street, which I'm pretty sure was Avatar. And so too close a time period. He can't do movies that quickly.
That makes sense.
No way.
Yeah. And it was so difficult trying to get the entire New York set to the bottom of the ocean. Mm-hmm. So we have, according to Empire Online, before Scorsese became interested, the project was wanting to be directed by who? Got Nick Cage by Molly, Steve, Peter Jackson, Nate Edgar Wright with Peg and Frost, and Marie, James Cameron. Ben, how would you like to score?
Okay, I want to give Steve, I love that Peter Jackson bit. There's 8 points. Bob, what a great joke. Let's give yourself an 8 point.
That was really good. Really
good saying that it would have been stretched out over 4 movies, because of course it would. And you would have changed the lore a little bit and invented a character. You know, it's too much, Peter. Relax.
Calm down, Peter.
Marie, I'm going to give 3 points to Marie, which is same number of Avatar sequels that are currently in development.
Which, if you don't
know, is the most insane thing in the world that a megalomaniac said to himself. The movie, the world loved Avatar so much, I will make three
more
sequels at the same time. That man. We did Steve. We do Nate.
Molly got Nick Cage.
I know.
And Nate with Edgar
Wright. Because Nick Cage was also in Moonstruck. 16 points to Molly.
Woo!
Okay.
16.
And if you are in Brooklyn anytime soon, the Moonstruck house is up for sale. So if you have a cool 40 to 50 mil, it can be yours. Who am I missing? Nate?
Yep. You got Nate with Edgar Wright. With Nate, Simon Pegg and Nick Frost.
What do you think you deserve, Nate?
Well, what I want is probably 13. I think I deserve more like 75.
Okay.
13 okay. is what I want.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. I'll give you 11.
Thank you.
Somewhere in the middle.
That's okay. I got 11 last time, too. So repetition is kind of what I need. So 11.
I got you.
There you go. Consistency is key. So who was interested in directing? It was Ridley Scott.
He
wanted Brad Pitt to play Jordan Belfort.
Wow. Mm.
Would have been a completely different movie at that point.
Yep.
I'm interested.
So we're now back to Lie again. Ben once voice an animated three-legged dog for college humor? So, Ben, was it the truth or was it a lie?
I don't. What can I say? I don't know. I don't remember.
That wine was pretty good, right?
Fast forward juice.
Yeah.
You didn't voice a dog, the three-legged dog, but there was a real three-legged dog named Mona.
My dog.
Your dog.
Aww.
Yeah.
Yeah,
no, three-legged rescue dog named Mona. Now, we're all dog people,
all of
us. All breeds, whether it's small dogs, big dogs, pitty mixes. Speaking of pit mixes, now, there was an incident at a dog park you were telling me about.
I just remembered what I... Oh,
yeah. Why don't you tell us a little about that story to allow you to omit anything you'd like to?
Well, I did share it. Oh, my gosh. I can't believe it.
Were you sniffing butts again?
Mona and I went to the dog park one time, and there was a bigger Great Dane there named Bones, and I knew his owner. He was a large puppy, very, very sweet dog. And there was a woman there who was fostering a small dachshund pit mix. And it was a truly bizarre looking dog. It was like as muscular as a pit, but built like a dachshund. So it was probably like 85 pounds with tiny legs, a chest. The only chest that could rival this dog's chest is my own. I would take my shirt off, but we don't have enough time. But a truly like diesel animal, like an animal, like that animal's ripped. And it had a toy it fixated on. It was like very fixated on this one toy, which happens with dogs sometimes. And the woman who had the dog, she was fostering him, so obviously didn't know a lot about him. Bones went for the toy. The dachshund pit mix went for Bones and latched onto his ear. And the women were trying to separate the two dogs, get them apart. And I walked up and I tried to pull them apart. None of that worked. I was getting so nervous. They're both screaming. Bones is yelping. The other dog is growling. And I remember my girlfriend at the time saying that dogs will release with their jaws if you stick a finger up their ass. So I momentarily considered what that meant to me and my life. And I stuck a finger up the dog's ass.
Yes, you did it!
and nothing happened.
No!
So I decided to stick two fingers in. No. Nothing happened. The dog was not fixed, I should say. The dog was intact. I twisted the dog's balls with two fingers in its ass. I mean, like, I really gave it to this dog. Like, people pay for this stuff. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Nothing good happened. Money. I did not know what to do. Everyone's screaming. The two women couldn't see me because they're facing each other and blocking, you know, and I'm behind the dog. And I get up to look for a stick to, like, maybe lever apart their mouths. And while I'm searching for a stick in a dog park, which you think would be an easy thing to find, a stick in a dog park, it's not. You can't find it. And a man came into the dog park and separated the two dogs, which we all know now, like, you lift up their hind legs and you pull them apart, and that separates their aggression. That stops them from being aggressive.
Oh.
And they were taking care of their own dogs. And I looked at Mona and I quickly put her on a leash and, like, I held my hand as far away from my body as I possibly could. And I went home and, like, I scrubbed and bleached it. And then my girlfriend at the time came home. I related the story to her and she said, "No, I told you it didn't work." And we had a discussion about listening and how important that is.
Yes. Yeah. So two fingers in the asshole, bad for releasing dogs, good for Tinder dates.
Exactly. Can I offer something, Bob, that might not have been readily available that's actually kind of interesting?
Yes, go right ahead. Of course.
So my dog, Mona, she played the three-legged dog on the now canceled TV show Louie. So there's a moment where Charles Grodin walks a three-legged dog in the second season.
Wow.
So that's my dog, Mona. That's my
famous dog. Awesome. What?
She almost has better IMDb credits than I.
That voice that you, when you were lying to us, that voice, do you talk as her in that voice?
Good, like, question.
Yeah.
Very I don't do the dog's voices, but if you see her, there is something regal about it. So I don't, you know, you end up talking like an idiot to your animal and their names end up like evolving. Like, her name at this point is like Moji, because I called her like Mojole Viage, which is like a red one. There it is. Forget juice again.
Forget
you know how the names evolve. But no, I don't know if I've ever spoken a voice, but I am positive. Because, pun intended, like, she could be a real bitch sometimes.
Sounds like my Mona. about...
I think that she was probably like Cleopatra in a past life and was condemned to be a dog. Because she can be very regal and keep to herself. And she doesn't give love easily. But when she does, you earn it, you know? So, anyways. Yeah, so I figured a dog's ass.
Wow.
Wow. People do pay money for that.
Speaking of things people pay
Rule
money
34,
for.
Right? Rule 34, right?
Yeah.
Rule 34.
Oh, God, no.
Rule 34. Yeah. Speaking of things people pay money for, how about our points?
Oh, so yeah.
Right now. Speaking of Mona, right now in last place, we still have Mona with 12.
Yay.
We have myself with 35. Molly with 67, Steve with 74, Marie with 75, and in the lead is Nate with 82 points.
Wow. Nice job, Nate.
All right.
It's still anyone's game. Join us when we return for Steve's pop quiz and Technically Correct, only on Balderdash Academy. Go Dashers!
Good afternoon, Dashers. This is your headmaster reminding you that we are now booking live Balderdash Academy. If you want improv comedy, custom game show experiences, team building, and more, you can find us online at balderdashacademy.com. And don't forget to pick up Balderdash Academy merchandise in our school store while you're there.
Hey, this is Bob. When I'm not being the headmaster at Balderdash Academy, I run Sleuth's Mystery Entertainment. At Sleuth's Mystery, we offer something different from your typical mystery experience. Our mysteries are crafted around the game and the experience as a whole. We blend characters, comedy, atmosphere, and a puzzle of a mystery for you to solve. Every show is unique, and every ending is different. At Sleuths Mystery Entertainment, you can see the show, play the game, and solve the mystery. If you're in New England, contact us at sleuthsmystery.com for a killer time. Welcome back to Balderdash Academy and our visiting professor, Ben Remeka. Stay tuned, because we're about to hear from Coach Steve and play fan favorite Technically Correct. But before we do that, our points. In last place, you have Mona the Cat with 12 points. Next, you have myself with 35, Molly with 67, Steve with 74, Marie with 75, and in the lead, we have Nate with 82 points.
Wow. Coming for you, Nate.
Before we move on to Steve's game, we are back with a final question from the Balderdash Academy randomizer. The spin will generate a random question out of 10 that Ben will try to answer in 30 seconds or less.
Stressful.
All right. Question number 6. What's one piece of advice that you wish you received when starting out that doesn't involve fingering a dog's asshole?
It was mostly advice about fingering dogs' asses, which I would keep you.
You can write a book on that stuff.
I mean, yeah.
You have to wash your hands.
Oh, my God.
You should go back and watch the previous video if this is totally out of context for you. Can you imagine just tuning into this one?
I would say, and this is what improv rules are, life rules, but like follow your foot. Like, I think I could have been braver earlier in my career. I think that I could have been less afraid to take large steps or large swings and sort of trusted my instinct or my ability early on. Just not to say that you shouldn't, pursue some training or work with some community. Like, you can always get sharper, but believe in yourself, whatever. but truly, like, follow your foot, follow your gut. There are plenty of people in this world who have gotten very far based on confidence alone. Truly. And if you feel like you're talented and you are talented, like, believe in that, I would say. Fake the confidence.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. Yeah. Perfect. And within the time frame, because I say it is. So
how's the trap door looking? Yeah. Still latched?
The latch was stuck, so I had to run with it. So being that it is the holiday season, whatever holiday you yourself follow, you might be looking for a way to give or you might be looking for a charity to give money to. We have a few suggestions this episode that we'd like you to look at. Number one, the Refugee Immigrant Center for Education and Legal Services. Links to all of these are in the description. And the Urban Resource Institute. These are great organizations. If you have spare cash this holiday season, go to the links in the description and give what you can. Ben, let's is keeping as upbeat as we can. Let's talk a little bit about these charities, about what they do and who they serve. And I think we know why they're important, especially in today's day and age.
Absolutely. So RICES, or however you want to pronounce it, RAICES, provides legal counsel for immigrant populations that might not necessarily have legal counsel. Obviously, this was a hot button topic during the last administration. But just helping people that might be trying to give themselves a better life have a little bit more access to legal support. And of course, the Urban Institute is for domestic abuse, especially among populations of people of color. And it's a pretty progressive and experimental is not the word, innovative organization as well. Like, for instance, one thing that I like about them or it's so hard to say, like about them. One thing that I think is a great initiative is they talk about homes with abuse with people that are trying to better their lives and how that affects pets and what that means for pets, which obviously is not like a big focal point necessarily, but this is the sort of stuff that they're open to. So, maybe skip a cup of coffee or a second cup of coffee and just throw some change in that direction. I think.
And
it's
of course,
of giving.
Mona was a rescue dog. So there's always that route too. You can always rescue.
You can always rescue.
Now, when it comes to it being a hot button issue, and this I'm telling to you, the audience, as a qualified fake professor at a fake school, I want to remind you that regardless what your political stance is on immigration or defense of immigrants, our second president, John Adams, defended the British who were involved in the Boston Massacre. In the United States, everybody deserves their trial and everybody deserves their defense. So if you believe in that, regardless of what side of the aisle you are on, check out the link in the description below and make a donation and prove your point. Stand by what you believe in. So moving on, it's time for Coach Steve's pop quiz. Now with his pop quiz, Coach of the Dashers, Steve Corning.
Yeah, that's my theme song, baby.
Be careful what meat you punch in freezer, because it might punch back.
All right, thank you, Bob. That's a tune, of course, from Head to Head Competitive Trivia, one of our other podcasts. If you haven't listened to it, it is pretty good. All right.
Hard sell.
Honor.
Hard sell.
Yeah, that was a good sell, right?
That was pretty good. Up it up.
Confidence.
Didn't we just talk about this?
I'm missing my hype man, Randy. He would be hyped for that. All right. In honor of tonight's visiting Professor Ben, who is a star of film and screen, we will play a game of everyone's favorite Finish That Tweet, featuring one of my favorite Twitter accounts out of Hollywood, that of director Rian Johnson. He's known for films like Brick, Looper, Star Wars The Last Jedi, and of course Knives Out, and also the occasional off the wall tweet. Now, there are so many that I could choose from. I literally just in this moment chose one out of four because I found so many good ones today from Rian Johnson. And so we're just going to go with this tweet. How this game works is I will read the first portion of a tweet, leave a blank on the end, and you guys fill it in with whatever you think Rian Johnson said in that moment. Now, this tweet came from February 9th, 2021. And Rian Johnson says, "I know I've harped on this before, but it's almost impossible to communicate to someone who hasn't read the original James Bond books how much they're about blank." What does Rian Johnson think the original James Bond books were all about? It's hard to say the phrase James Bond without saying film right after. It's hard for me.
It's the lisp.
It is. I know. It's a childhood list. I'm still struggling from it. Apparently, I just found out about. All right, let's start with whoever is making the best eye contact, and that is, of course, Nate Green. Nate Green finished that tweet.
Yes. So he said that first part, and he said the James Bond books were really about how people need to embrace oat milk in their Starbucks coffees, and really need to give it a shot before they start making snide remarks to other people. I don't get it, but that's what he said.
Nate, what was the name of the James Bond movie that heavily featured the oat milk?
The oat milk? It was...
Or wanted to be, that was never made, I suppose.
James Bond, Oat in a Boat. in a dairy farm.
That was when he had to invade Canada.
I mean, Sean Connery's Scottish, so I figured, you know, it didn't matter where it took place.
That was a Scottish accent.
No, I'm just simply saying, you know, they have a Scottish guy playing. continuity didn't matter then.
Sure.
Thank you, Nate. Nate went, of course, with the importance of oat milk in your Starbucks coffee. Let's go to Molly McGill.
Thank you so much for choosing me. he said that first part that Nate was referring to in his answer. And harping on the fact that the James Bond books were really about the struggles of parenting. And it's all really a metaphor for when you're trying to put the kid down for a nap or for the night and you're trying to get out of the room, but something always bringing you in and you're trying, you just can't get out and you're in and you're out and you never sleep. And, mm-hmm. you know, tomorrow you're going to die. And next thing you know, he's got a gold
another
finger.
Day.
Turn back time.
That's what it's about.
It is.
So if you had to sum that up in a couple words, Molly.
Sum it up in a couple words. Mm-hmm. Words. The struggles of parenting.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Thank you, Ryan Johnson. All right, let's go to Marie Stuart Harmon.
Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. You know, Bond is just getting everywhere. He's taking planes, he's taking trains and automobiles, all the places. And then he was like, oh, we've already got a movie named that. So we're going to focus on the boobs and the martinis.
Boobtinis.
Boobtinis.
Boob Martinis sounds like a Bond character.
Yeah.
Does, yeah.
There's a character named Pussy. I think a Boob Martini could also be a character. Let's go to Bob. Bob, what do you think Ryan Johnson thinks the James Bond books are all about?
Well, of course, I mean, if you take a look at the original source material, Ian Fleming was very big about this in all of his works, even going as far into his children's books, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. It was about trying to produce books with titles that were innately sexual.
Oh, chitty chitty bang bang.
Pop on pop.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So, like, Ian Fleming had this just talent of accidental innuendo. And it didn't matter what he named, it just sounded dirty. Of course, there's his unpublished children's books, The Adventure of Harry Taco, which was, of course, about Harold, who had a little taco truck in New York City, pushing around, meeting people on the street. It was just a gift that many authors don't have.
Thank you, Bob.
Newbery Award winner.
That was, yeah. All right, Ben, let's go to you for the score. Let me read back what we had. Nate, of course, mentioned the importance of oat milk in your Starbucks order. Molly went with the struggles of rearing the young. Marie thought it was the importance of planes, trains, and automobiles. And then, of course, Bob LeBlanc thinks it's actually about hidden sexuality.
Wow. Let's give Molly 30.
Woo!
Because we can never, ever speak strongly enough about the difficulties of parenting. I think it's people that are parents are unsung heroes.
Thank you, Ben.
And I know that Molly also, as she was intimating this idea of sneaking out of a sleeping child's room so as not to wake them, was also putting in an Easter egg of A Quiet Place, because that was the inspiration for A Quiet Place.
Of course, absolutely. Yes, I was.
Which Molly is a great, knew that. Great movie as well, in which Carrie Fisher almost starred, of course. Which brings me to Marie. Anna Mary Poppins reference is buried in there. But we'll get back to that in 1 second. Marie will throw 20 points.
Thank you.
Nate, with that amazing Sean Connery. Sean Connery, RIP. You know, we'll give Nate 16, which is as many ounces there are in a pint of oat milk.
Oh,
that's great, you hoser. Oh, that's great.
I want to see Canadian James Bond now. I mean, he still works for the Queen really at the time.
Do.
Yeah,
I really do. Yeah. And if you put
could you politely remove your underwear there, eh? I'll take my martini any way you'd like to give it, as long as it's Molson.
Right. Absolutely. Like, oh, I'll see myself out, eh? No consent, unconsented up here. Right? But you could use the Dench lisp, right?
Didn't it yep.
say like, Danish tape?
Bring that in. The Dench lisp.
Okay. We've created a monster of a lisping Canadian. Bob, I'm going to give Bob. Wait, who am I missing? I got Molly, Marie, and Nate, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Bob. Yep.
Oh, okay, cool. You know what? I'm going to give you 60 points, Bob. And I'll tell you who was the male co-lead in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, Your Sexual Extravaganza?
Who was the male co-lead was, of course, the king of accents.
Yeah. He was really good at that.
But also talking about, if Fleming had such a gift for using innuendo in names, casting Dick
That's
Van
true.
Dyke.
Dick Van Dyke. Dick Van Dyke himself sounds like he came from a Bond novel.
Yeah, you're right.
It really, really does. The little more hero.
Dyke. Van Dyke. Richard Van Dyke.
Of the German Van Dykes?
Dick Van Dyke sounds like Dick Van Patten couldn't think of a good alias.
Didn't he have a brother? Wasn't there a brother that was on Coach?
Jerry Van Dyke. Wasn't it Jerry Van or Jerry Van
Patten? I really want you to be right.
I think
he does have a brother. His brother was on Coach, the sitcom. Yeah. But just imagine, like, whatever. There's Dick Van Dyke, and then you're Jerry Van Dyke.
And then Jerry Van Dyke.
I'm looking that up.
Do that, baby. And then Mona, for being so sweet and quiet, I think we're going to give her 43 points.
Holy Mona Moses. Deserves it.
Mona she deserves it.
43.
Did I get everybody? Do I award points to Steve? Is that
if
Jerry
you
Van
would
Dyke?
Like to, that you can record. Jerry you can award him to anybody.
You know, Steve was such a he went through it twice.
He did.
And the listener knows all about that because it stayed in.
Well, it has to be now. We're referencing it.
That's true.
I know. It's too late. Once
the
you
more
reference
we reference, the more it stays.
Absolutely. And just to be clear, Steve, you were reading.
Well, I had to write down. Okay. I had to type out what the tweet said.
Okay.
And but then I had to read what I had written that the tweet said. It's a big
so
process,
it was a handwriting but... issue.
You're trying to justify basic kindergarten skills.
Like books and films are hard to distinguish.
Absolutely. I'll give Steve a healthy 11 for that one.
That's fair, because I did dig through a lot of Ryan Johnson tweets this afternoon.
You really did.
There you go.
Put in a lot of work. Well, are you ready to hear the correct answer?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Okay, unfortunately, you were all incorrect.
What?
Here's what Ryan Johnson thinks the James Bond books are all about. It's almost impossible to communicate to someone who hasn't read the original James Bond books how much they're about toast.
What?
Toast? Like crisped bread?
Yep. So let's all phone Ryan Johnson and try and figure out what the hell he's talking about.
This bread is
he's
wicked dry.
What's up?
This is a new hobby. That's
so
hobby.
Yeah. Check out the Twitter of Ryan Johnson. There's some really good. It's a treasure trove of fun mysteries.
Wait, I got one. Live and let rye.
There you go.
20 points to Ben.
That's good.
Ben gets 20.
20 for Ben. Ben's now on the board. Speaking of on the board, let's hear our points right now. Ben is in last place with 20 points, followed by Mona the Cat with 55.
Oh my God.
Next, we have Steve with 85, a tie between Marie and myself with 95, Molly with 98, and Nate. Molly with 97, and Nate with 98 points.
Holy, there's your one point.
It comes down to 1 point. And that's good because we go into technically correct.
Oh, great. My favorite.
Molly's favorite game.
So this is a fan favorite, technically correct. I'm going to read a description of a movie. That is technically correct. Right. Our faculty members will try to come up with an answer as fast as possible and present it one by one. The visiting professor, Ben, will award points based on how he sees fit. Movie number one describes an apprentice who gets trained by an Egyptian with a Spanish name.
What?
It's the movie about an Egyptian who gets trained. It's a movie about an apprentice who gets trained by an Egyptian with a Spanish name. Steve, how would you like to score? Well, sorry, Steve, what's your answer?
I'd like to give
Steve... How would you
Steve
like to score? You want to give out points?
42 points.
How would you like to answer?
I'm feeling really good about Steve tonight.
42 points to Mona the cat.
That she deserves it more than I do. I'm saying the Prince of Egypt. It's a little on the nose, Prince, but I'm going for it.
Prince of Egypt. Nate, what do you have?
At the Museum.
Night at the Museum, Marie.
The Princess Bride.
What's it called?
Princess Bride, Molly.
What's that one with Nicolas Cage and then he's in Egypt?
Oh, no! No!
What is it? No! The Tale of the Curse or something?
I'm going to say Face Off just to screw you over.
Yes!
Oh, God, no! Damn it.
So, Molly's answer is that one with Nicolas Cage.
Right?
The Curse of the Threat or something?
Ghost Rider.
Oh my god! Oh my god! Oh, it's a movie. I swear.
It was a fever dream Molly had.
First of that one with Nick Cage.
That legit could be a movie.
An apprentice gets trained by an Egyptian with a Spanish name. We have Steve with Prince of Egypt, Nate with Night at the Museum, Marie with The Princess Bride, Molly with The Curse of That One with Nick Cage, where he's that guy. Ben, how would you like to score?
I want to take away 45 points from Mona because she didn't say anything.
Oh, Mona.
The final round. And Steve, right. I'm sorry, but like a pet is a reflection of its owner.
Yeah.
Your pet has been pretty impolite.
Yeah.
She's cleaning herself right now. She's cleaning herself. That is disgusting. All right. What if a family is watching this and they watch your cat porn, Steve?
How dare she?
she's getting up. Oh, yeah, she's
giving it to you now, Ben.
Yeah, she's like, come
if
figure
if
my butt, man.
The podcast, you might want to check out the video.
I'll give, I want to dock Nate for 0.5 of a point.
Okay.
I'd like to give Marie 2.5 points.
Mm. Thank you.
I'd like to give Bob 2.5 points. Molly, half of a point.
Wow.
So we're talking. I'll give Steve 12 points.
Whoa. Wow.
12 points.
I'll take it. Why not?
All right. So we have an apprentice gets trained by an Egyptian with a Spanish name, describes the Highlander. My name's Ramirez. I play an Egyptian with a Spanish name who fights with a Japanese weapon I had made for me in China. He's the only Scottish person in the entire film of The Highlander.
And it takes place in Canada.
Hey, they were very polite.
The Highlander. What is that?
That's
a car.
Only one, eh?
Was Nick Cage in that film, though? Molly wants to know.
Nick Cage?
I'm Googling that after.
Nick Cage isn't, but Clancy Brown was brilliant in it.
And
so movie number two, two people fear that love will come between them. Two people fear that love will come between them. Nate, what does that describe?
That love will come between them.
I mean, easy. Shawshank Redemption.
Two people.
Shawshank Redemption. All right,
them.
Marie.
Oh God, I just had the name.
I feel you.
No! Two people who are in love, who think love is going to come between them. Due date.
Due date. Yeah. All right.
Due date.
Molly, what do you have?
Pretty Woman.
Pretty Woman and Steve.
Ooh, that's good, Molly.
True Romance.
True Romance.
Oh.
So, two people fear that love will come between them. Nate with Shawshank Redemption. Marie with Due Date. Molly with Pretty Woman. And Steve with True Romance. Ben, how would you like to score?
I want everybody to get a 2, except for Mona, that disgusting dog. Gets -4.
Oh.
All right.
Look at that face. Oh, she did briefly look over.
All right. So,
in disgust.
Two people fear love will come between them describes when Harry met Sally.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
And Ben, that's why I asked.
I love it.
Movie number three. Wait. Night with a Legend.
Did we get scores?
Yes.
Dude.
Did you not remember the Mona? Two that you received?
Oh, sorry. I was distracted by my cat being a bitch.
And two, Steve A?
I'm sorry. It happened so fast.
Steve, you got to sharpen your pencils. Come on.
All right.
Pens to me.
Movie number three, A Knight with a Legendary Weapon gets the help of a wizard and a collection of misfits to save a princess trapped in a space fortress.
Jeebus cripes.
Can you repeat that, please?
I would be my pleasure. This is actually the description of the movie. That's what's disturbing. A knight with a legendary weapon gets help of a wizard and a collection of misfits to save a princess trapped in a space fortress. Luckily, Marie, you go first. So what would you like to answer?
I'm so glad. Space balls.
Space balls. Molly.
Princess in a space fortress. Time bandits.
Time bandits. I love that movie.
Great movie.
Steve, what do you got?
That is Star Wars, also known as A New Hope.
Oh!
Star Wars, A New Hope. Nate, what's your answer?
I'm going to have to say that I'm drawing out this answer so that way I can say... It is a Hallmark Christmas special of the Muppets take their time.
I'd watch that.
Nailed it, Nate. Perfect. All right. So, a knight with a legendary weapon gets help of a wizard and a collection of misfits to save a princess trapped in a space fortress.
Wait, Ben, Marie, do you know it?
Is it Lord of the Rings?
I mean, I think it's Star Wars. That's to be Star Wars.
Yeah. Or is it Lord of the Rings?
Marie what? Has Spaceballs, Molly with Time Bandits, Steve with A New Hope, and Nate with Muppets Take Their Time. Ben, how would you like to score?
Muppets Take Their Time.
It's okay.
I'm blown away by all those. I mean, Spaceballs, is it wrong? It's not really wrong.
Is it the name of the game?
It's a great movie.
Muppets
Take Their Time. I feel like it's just like if you married the Muppets and the Queen, it's just like spilling coffee pots of the Muppets in like beautiful room. Before one of them turns, it says like, oh man, or something like that. Right? Yeah. Muppets think we got a show tonight. I don't fuck you though. Steve, I feel like it's accurate. Molly, what did you say again?
Time bandits.
Oh,
Mom,
such a great...
don't touch it. It's pure evil.
Yeah, it's such a great movie.
I love it. Yeah.
There's a bunch of misfits.
Yeah, and
it's
Sean Connery.
It's very true. Time Bandits, one of Terry Gilliam's early works, and so good, and such a great cast. Everybody gets 10, except for Steve, who gets 8.
Whoa.
Wow.
Because you tried to be smart, Steve. You tried to be smart with the right answer.
My bad. I'll do better.
Kind of the right answer. So it is technically correct, but it's also technically wrong for this one. A knight with a legendary weapon gets help of a wizard and a collection of misfits to save a princess trapped in a space fortress accurately describes Krull.
Oh my gosh.
Did you say Crow?
Krull.
The Crow. Yeah, you're right.
It sounds like
1983's Krull.
Krull.
Wait, so Ben, can I get some bonus points for not being right?
If you can tell me what famous action star right now got one of his earliest roles in Krull.
Oh my
can I
I'll
guess?
Give you 15 points.
Ooh.
Ooh.
I have no.
He's really good in the role, too. I mean, it's a good
role.
He
is really
good. I've never seen the film. Let's just say John Malkovich.
Oh, how did you get that? That's crazy. It's Liam Neeson.
I know, right?
Marie knew it. Yeah. It's her face.
Did you know Marie?
No, I didn't.
With a pre-Hagrid dubbed, because they didn't like his Yorkie accent, his Midland accent, Robbie Coltrane.
Really?
What
they
year?
They dubbed his accent for that film.
That is
1983.
Yeah.
I felt like it was around the time that Arnold Schwarzenegger was probably getting fit and stuff. So that was my guess, but I was wrong.
No, it's good.
It was like Conan the Destroyer time, definitely. There really are some movies in the early 80s where you're like, I do not know how this got made.
Yes.
Drugs. I mean, that's how it got made.
Yeah. But,
riding on the tails of Star Wars. Movie number four. This one actually written, not the movie, but this technically correct, written by Randy Hunt, our professor of drama, professor of theater. So movie number four is A Man Discovers How to Get Ahead of His Wife. A Man Discovers How to Get Ahead of His Wife. Molly, what's your answer?
Oh, excuse me. Britney versus Spears.
Britney versus Spears. All right, Steve, what do you have?
I'm going to go with the Other Boleyn Girl.
Other Boleyn Girl.
Tries to get ahead.
Nice play on words. Nate, what do you have?
Yes.
Death Becomes Her.
Death Becomes Her. Emery.
Hall Pass.
So, A Man Discovers How to Get Ahead of His Wife. We have Molly, Britney versus Spears, Steve, the Other Boleyn Girl, Nate, Death Becomes Her, and Marie, Hall Pass. Ben, how would you like to score?
Nate, I want you to know that was my first choice, and then I went to the obvious answer of Britney versus Spears. So, like mine.
I love Britney versus Spears. I mean, that sounds like Kramer versus Kramer, except with worse actors.
And a more tragic story.
Definitely a more tragic story. This is so tough, but you guys are so okay. Hall Pass was the Sudeikis Wilson.
Yep.
That was I could only imagine has some very regretful elements in it right now.
Yes.
For me to watch it again. Right? Tries to get ahead of his girl. That's two. Molly, four. Steve, five. Nate, three. Marie, four. Bob, you know what, Bob? Give yourself a five.
Nice.
All right.
Ben, do you have a guess? Do you know what it is?
I mean, I thought it might be something with a beheading, but I don't know enough about the Other Boleyn Girl or that. I don't know. Yeah, I can't.
It's tough.
That's okay. A Man Discovers How to Get Ahead of His Wife is what I like to consider the unofficial sequel to The Usual Suspects, 7.
Oh my God.
Of course.
Wow.
Wait. Did he discover how to get ahead of his wife? I guess.
Don't open the box.
The wrong guy. Sorry.
Spoiler.
Spoilers.
Yeah, huge spoiler. Oh my God.
Can you say spoilers to a movie that's almost 30 years old?
I mean, double spoiled. Aww. And it has Kevin Spacey in it too, so it's like big danger zone, baby.
Yeah. There you go.
And it's ahead of his wife. I see what you did there. I see. Very
Ben,
good.
I want to thank you for being a visiting professor tonight on Balderdash Academy. What is new and exciting coming up for you?
A couple months ago, I mounted some shows in Vermont, with a small team of old ex-UCB folks called, Nightcap, where we take, written down secrets of crazy one night stands or wild party nights. And then we use that as a source to improvise.
Nice.
So,
fun.
That's good.
It's super fun. You learn some pretty interesting stuff about your audience, especially when they know that it can be anonymous. And then I would just encourage you, check out Eliza Schlesinger's sketch show or the final season of Broad City. Or if you really want to go to Amazon and watch Alpha House, I will look forward to those pennies and residuals down the road.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's about it that's going on right now. So yeah, thank you guys. So this was so much fun, really.
Oh my God,
Thank you. Thank you. Now, yeah. Links to everything are in the description. So if you want to save time, just go there and you click the link. Remember, if you have the opportunity to give this season, look at Urban Resource Institute and look at Rice's, ricestexas.com, I think it is. The link is in the description. Please go and check them out. Now, before I announce who our winner tonight is, it's time for tonight's moral. Now, we had a great show tonight. We learned quite a bit about Ben, about ourselves, and about the movie industry. In particular, if you're short a multivitamin and want to get in touch with your 1980s, you can always try to snort vitamin B. But don't, because we're a comedy show. You shouldn't take what we say literally.
The lawyers
don't
finger
a dog's butt either.
Winner for tonight. The points stand clear. Mona takes it. No, I'm just kidding.
Mona's kicked out of the group.
In last place, we have our visiting professor with 32 points, followed by Mona the cat with 48. We have myself coming in next at 109.5 points.
Wow.
We have... This is a tight race. We have Steve with 112 points.
Mm-hmm.
Nate with 112.5 points. We have Molly and Marie. Which one is the winner?
I don't know.
Now, what I can tell you is the winner is separated by less than 1 point.
So a half a point.
Less than half a point.
Oh, when did that happen? Oh my God.
So right now we have Molly at 113.5 points, which means Marie won, which 113.54.
Wow. I never win.
Wow.
Thanks,
congrats,
Ben.
Marie.
What? All right.
Yep. Yeah.
So Marie got her win.
Thank you.
Thank you for visiting us here at Balderdash Academy. I've been your headmaster, Bob LeBlanc. Joining me has been our faculty professor of STEAM, Nate Green.
It's me this time.
Coach of the Balderdash Academy Dashers, Steve Corning.
Guys, we'll get him next time.
Professor of English Language Arts, Molly McGill.
No, I'll get him next time, and then the next time, and then the next time.
And today's reigning champion, Professor of Home Ec and Wellness, Marie Stewart Harmon.
Well earned. What a close race.
I am the champion, my professors.
And, of course, our visiting professor, Ben Remeka. Ben, thank you so much.
Yes.
My pleasure, truly.
Oh, my God, so fun.
We hope you have a happy and healthy holiday season. Whatever you celebrate, stay safe. Go Dashers!
Woo!
Remember to like and subscribe to the video. Also, remember that we have options available if you'd like to support the show directly. You can show your school pride by picking up some merch from our store. We are also now booking live shows. So if you want a game show experience, a quiz show, improv comedy, you can find us all online at balderdashacademy.com. It's been a pleasure. Have a good night.
Two-finger salute.
And a twist of the balls.
Go Dashers. Balderdash Academy. Balderdash Academy was produced and edited by Bob LeBlanc. Theme music by Think Fish Tank. Performed and written by Steve Corning, Carla Rose Dubois, Nate Green, Randy Hunt, Bob LeBlanc, Molly McGill, and Marie Stewart Harmon. Copyright 2021 by Robert J. LeBlanc and Steve Corning. All rights reserved. Go Dashers!